Keandre Miller. Mm-hmm. He ends up getting traded from the Rangers to the Hurricanes in a kind of an eye-opening return for the Rangers. They got an excellent return back. If you're the Sabres, you look at that as like, look at all they got for him. And then your Byram's like, look how much they paid him, and his numbers aren't too different from mine. But just looking back to what Tampa gave up for him years ago, like I don't get like what do these executives see that we don't see? But you don't ever give up that much for a
low
guy.
Low key though, I think Tampa's was valid. I'm defending Tampa here because they were a Stanley Cup champion, and they're like, fuck it, like we're contending for a Stanley Cup right now. Fuck them draft picks.
That's... I know, but it didn't work out. You look like an idiot when it doesn't work out. You win the cup. I was like, who cares?
Like the value clearly wasn't there. Who gives a five draft picks for a fourth line grinder? But yeah. Like Tampa did. So. Welcome to the Checking From Behind podcast. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by my co-host, Preston. We have a special guest on today. I guess technically guests. If you guys are former viewers or have been viewers for over a year now, you guys know that Chris used to be part of us. Of course, stuff happened, and then he got busy and hasn't been able to join us. However, though, he's joining us for today's episode. The NHL and NHLPA have been working on a new CBA agreement from 26 until the 2020-30 season. They finally officially agreed upon. It comes effective starting September of 2026. And we went over some of it in our last episode. Sorry, two episodes ago. But I'm only going to list off things that we did not cover in the last episode. So if you guys want the rest of it, just go watch two episodes ago and you guys will find everything. But we did talk about the NHL playoff lineup salary cap that has been confirmed. And I did want to confirm it for us. It does not include scratches, just 18 skaters and then the two dress goalies. Player salaries cannot be retained more than once in a 75-day period. AHL eligibility to one 19-year-old CHLer. Restrictions on front-loaded contracts subsequent years cannot be less than 71% of the previous year's salary plus bonus. And lastly, you can now recall up to five players, four players at once after the trade deadline.
I mean, I really don't have anything to complain about. We're learning a lot more now about more details, you know, since they initially got agreed upon. And like, my favorite thing I think I like in there, I like the playoff salary cap. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good thing to stop teams from kind of circumnavigating the cap. It's going to change things a lot, I think, in the league. I think for a long time with playoff teams, you saw, especially if they had an injury, like Vegas was, you know, pretty well known for this. Tampa, almost every Stanley Cup champion the last few years has done this, though, where they have an injured player that probably won't be back till the playoffs, LTIR, and then you go out and make a big trade, like the Panthers did this year with Seth Jones, you know, when Matthew Tkachuk was on LTIR until the playoffs started. So perfectly within the rules at the time, but then the playoffs start and they're way over the salary cap. But yeah, I really think this is a good move.
This is my favorite move.
Yeah.
And this, the 84-game regular season, are my two favorite. And going to the LTIR stuff, I'm wondering, obviously it's just going to be a series by playoff thing, but I'm interested to see if eventually it'll turn into you have to have like a quote-unquote locked NHL roster for the series. And then let's say you go into the first round, right? You have multiple injuries and it's not like, okay, you can recall a player to come play for you on the roster and have those exceptions. But overall, I like the start of closing the LTIR loophole and going from there, because it stops teams, like you said, from having one of their better players and one of their highest paid players on the team getting injured. And even if he is injured right up to round one, you can't go out and get a $6 million defenseman from a team that's actively tanking or one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
And now you're 4.5 over the salary cap come game one of the playoffs.
I mean, almost every team that's won the Stanley Cup the last years it didn't. Vegas was pretty infamous for it. Tampa, very, very infamous for doing it. You know, Nikita Kucherov missed the whole season. All of a sudden, he's back for game one of the playoffs. The Oilers did it this year with Evander Kane. Like, almost, you kind of have to do it nowadays if you want to have a team deep enough to go far in the playoffs. So I don't really blame the teams for taking advantage of a loophole. Yeah, probably. But this wasn't something I thought was going to be addressed in the CBA. I thought it was going to be really hard to figure it out, and I even think Gary Bettman might have said they weren't really looking into addressing it, and the league wasn't overly concerned. Maybe the players were. I'm not sure if that was more concerned from the players' union side of it, but they worked it out. Another thing I really want to highlight in the CBA that I really like is having one 19-year-old CHLer eligible to play in the AHL. This is just a no-brainer, I think, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. because there are a few guys every few years that might not or aren't good enough to play in the NHL yet, clearly, but they're too good to play in juniors. Like they don't need to be playing there. They have nothing to prove there. And I think having an extra year in the AHL as a 19-year-old would be super beneficial for them. You know, a guy like Shane Wright ended up getting an exception, but you know, you shouldn't have to apply for an exception from the CHL, especially if it's a top player. They're going to want them playing in that league because it sells tickets, gets people in their seats, and they want the best players playing. So I think this is a great move to help player development as well.
It's a great move. You see a lot of times where a player gets drafted when they're 18. They go back to juniors for another year, and if they don't crack the roster or do like the 9-game trial, whatever it is, then you have to send them back to juniors instead of letting them play professional hockey, because a lot of these guys that are even getting the game 9-game trials or are in training camp and then the preseason, they're too good for juniors. That's the reason why they're on the training camp roster. So to be able to get them pro experience and have the ability to be like, you know what, if we need him come March and we're not fighting for a playoff spot, let's say the Blackhawks, for example, they have a guy who's 19, not saying they do now, but just in general. And they want to see, you know, 10 games out of him to end the season. He doesn't get the 9-game trial in the beginning of the season, whatever. Hey, let's see what he has for us. And then going into next season, now we know what he can do for us. And I really think that the NHLPA feels like this feels like that they fought for this as well. And it feels like the NHL and NHLPA, A, they don't want a lockout, which is phenomenal. B, I like that they got it done over a year early, which is great news. And C, it feels like a lot of the stuff they really agreed upon. I don't know how fast it was, but overall, I like it.
It didn't seem like, from what we heard, there were any real holdups in negotiations. Everything seemed to have gone pretty smoothly. And like I said before, I really don't see any issues with the CBA. We get 4 more years of guaranteed NHL hockey until 2030. Also, another thing, I don't know if we mentioned this in the video before when we talked about it, but it's official now, NHL players can play in the 2030 Olympics as well. Yeah. That was also part of the CBA agreement. So we got 2 more Olympics with NHL players at least. But
bangers. I saw somebody say a hot take on Instagram. It was just a dumb Instagram post that they think that the NHL in the Olympics is going to disappoint us.
Why would that be?
Don't know.
Did they not watch the World Cup of Hockey?
The World Cup of Hockey might have been the best thing that happened this season.
And the Four Nations face—I meant the Four Nations face-off. That was amazing,
that
though.
That was great.
You see what players want this. They want best on best competition. That's just that's rage bait, in my opinion. Anyone who watches any professional sports, so you want best on best. And players, the Olympics are different, man. They bring out different things in different people. You got Connor McDavid playing on the same line with Sidney Crosby. Like, what?
And Nathan McKinnon.
But you're telling me that's not going to be like absolute cinema? What are we talking about,
dude,
here?
Dude, 10 seconds or 15 seconds into
games. That beautiful play.
I think it was their first game,
too. It was the first play. They got a power play. Yeah, I was like, the Olympics is just going to intensify that. The USA-Canada game was insane.
Yeah.
You don't think it's going to be even crazier an actual Olympic gold medal on the line?
And it's going to be a lot of the same players, too. Mm-hmm. And now it's not just for stuff that the NHL is giving you. You literally not only get to represent your country, but also get to play for a gold medal that 0.0000001% of people, probably even lower, have a chance to even compete for.
Yeah, people who are saying, oh, you're going to be disappointed. I don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Real quick, let's hop into the NHL voted on decentralizing the draft again. The majority of teams voted to keep it. What the fuck are we doing?
I get why teams like this, because they get to save a lot on travel expenses. Like in L.A., like all the East Coast teams having to fly their whole scouting department, front office people out to L.A. for a week, get a hotel room, and have to set up their whole command center there. And it can get really expensive really fast. I get that, but just don't do the draft house again.
I thought it was an okay idea until they brought out the draft house. And when we saw the draft house, we're like, is this first overall pick? Is this top 5? The entire fucking draft.
It was awful. It was horrible. I hope I never see the draft house again.
Nah, if I'm watching a draft next year and I see Gary Bettman after his 2.5-hour-long speech, be like, all right, ladies and gents, we have the draft house here. I'm chucking the remote at the wall. Actually, it's going through the TV.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, especially I have a reporter in there that just kept asking questions.
Half of them didn't know English, so like when the reporter
I like the guys that didn't know English, because it would be like a minute interview is like, thank you for drafting me.
And then you had some teams that they couldn't hear the players, or the players couldn't hear them. It was a mess. And if they got rid of that, I thought it wasn't that bad.
The one thing though I do will miss, if it sounds like going forward it's probably going to be a decentralized draft, though, and the one thing that I think we're going to miss, hockey fans are, is just going to, I think it's going to lead to less activity, like trade activity on draft night, because, you know, when everyone's there in person on the floor, it just makes it so much easier to get trade deals done, and people can hear rumors going around. It's like sitting at like the lunch table at school where everyone is just in one big place and you can hear everybody talking and you hear drama going around the table and you can hear like trade rumors and stuff. And you just go up to the GM and talk to him face to face and get a deal done right then and there. It just makes things easier. And I think that's why in this draft, you saw a little bit less activity than we typically see.
Yeah. We've seen stuff where in the past we top 10 draft pick or whatever, like within the top 10, you have a trade. Like we saw it with the
top
Kirby 10
trade. Top 10 trades are pretty rare, honestly.
Yeah, that's true. But we saw it with like Kirby Doc a few years ago. I think it was in the 2022 draft. In Montreal.
Swing and a miss for Montreal there.
Yeah.
Not there. I mean, Kirby Doc just couldn't stay in the ice. It was unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, it looked like a solid trade.
Yeah.
But like,
everyone was like, Chicago, why are you trading him? Like, he's like, what was he, 20 at the time? Yeah, and then, I mean, you just can't stay on the ice.
No.
Unfortunate.
But I totally get why this year you just had a bunch of, like, draft pick movement rather than a bunch of players. Harder to get a deal done. And,
I just hope they revise it next year. It was just so boring to watch.
It was boring. It took forever. There was, like, I think the first four or five picks took, like, an hour and 15 or something like that.
Yeah, I was legitimately falling asleep.
A situation that has dragged on for a while, Chris, I know this is your cup of tea, Bowen Byram situation in Buffalo. I don't think we mentioned it in our previous episode, but the Sabres filed for arbitration for Bowen Byram. Again, it's an interesting situation where Byram seems like he wants to get paid. There's a number going around at $9 million that he wants that. Sabres clearly don't want to give him $9 million, but also the stuff going around that Byram doesn't want to be in Buffalo, it's so completely false. And he wants to be in Buffalo, and he's of that mindset of, listen, I want to be in Buffalo. I want to play here. But if you guys trade me, I'm also not going to be pissed off as you either. It's just a end of the day, he wants to get his money.
It's a business. Yeah. I don't think he's asked for a trade. There's never been rumors that he asked for a trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Elliot said it's completely different than the Paterka situation where Paterka just very clearly wanted out and did not want to talk to the Sabres at all. Whereas Byram, he will want to be here. He has said it. But also, like you said, he wouldn't mind a trade if that would happen at the end of the day. But he just wants to get paid. He doesn't matter where it is. He just wants to get paid. And he has a number in his mind. Sabres, for whatever reason, don't want to give it to him. I get it. It's a lot for now. Cap's going up. It's going to be completely different. But, you know, at the end of the day, we don't know where Byram's going to play next season.
I still think it's more likely than not that he's on the Sabres next year. Mm-hmm. I think the longer this goes out, I think the higher chances he is a Saber, at least for another year, goes on. We'll see if it actually do get to the arbitration date. Because if we get to the arbitration date, he's on the Sabres next year, whether it's for a one-year deal or a two-year deal, whatever Byram elects. Honestly, it wouldn't shock me if he elected for another one-year deal. It kind of like bet on himself if he really truly wants to get paid and he doesn't care about where he's playing. But if he wants to take a two-year deal and walk himself to UFA, so he'll have more options. I don't know if the market, unless he like really takes a big jump the next couple of years, I don't know if the market will be where he wants it to be. Because if you look at his numbers, you know, when he's not with Dahlin, they're not great. I mean, he is still a young defenseman. He's only 24. He could still definitely get better. But I think since he's gotten to Buffalo, he's just regressed a little bit.
His defensive play has regressed, yes, but his offense has been the most consistent it's been.
Yeah, it definitely has. He posted career highs in assists and points this past season, but his defensive game, it hasn't been good. It's been, I think it's in the 40th percentile. I mean,
that might be a product of just being on the Sabres. Not great goaltending. The forwards don't really help a lot defensively. They have a lot of defensive issues, so I'm not pinning that all on Byram, but yeah.
Another reason right now, a top six forward addition isn't really necessary right now because Paterka did not play defense at all.
I would say a top six addition is necessary, though, because you're missing the scoring.
You're missing the scoring, but you're also not having a black hole just standing there on the ice.
I get that, but you know, I think Paterka could be a 30-plus goal scorer in the league, and you know, you just traded that away. Like, Kesselring and Doan aren't going to get you 30 goals combined, I don't think. So
what I will say is Paterka, he was great offensively. He's a 30-goal scorer, 80-point guy in his prime. I think that's his ceiling. But when you look at his overall defensive game, when he wasn't scoring, we're not just talking about getting assists.
Oh, I completely agree with you. He was just liability defensively. Like, yeah, he has not shown any growth. He doesn't have really shown a desire to even want to play defense.
Let's also talk about how Paterka's on-ice shooting percentage was, like, the highest in NHL history this past season. And that's just not sustainable.
I mean, I think he benefited a lot from playing with, you know, with guys like Tage Thompson and Alex Tuch a lot. He'll have a good chance to keep getting better in Utah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll see if Paterka ends up, you know, becoming the player that he can be. I think he can be potentially a 40-plus goal scorer. I think he's that good offensively. He's just going to have to round out his defensive game. But getting back to Bo and Byram, you know, I don't think $9 million is a crazy number for him. Yeah, that Darnell Nurse contract, like the other defensemen in the league must love that contract for them. But then another aspect of that is, this is something me and Zach highlighted, was when we were talking, having a meeting about what we wanted the plan to talk about was, you know, Keandre Miller. Mm-hmm. He ends up getting traded from the Rangers to the Hurricanes in kind of an eye-opening return for the Rangers. They got an excellent return back, I thought, with a player that...
First, second, and a 22-year-old Scott Moero.
And then Keandre Miller got paid.
Yeah.
So if you're the Sabres, you look at that as like, look at all they got for him. And then your Byram's like, look how much they paid him. And his numbers aren't too different from mine.
And now both teams are like, not both teams, but both parties, the Sabres are like, all right, we want a top six guy plus another defenseman potentially.
Yeah.
And then Byram's like, all right, I'm clearly better than Miller, or we're at least in similar ballparks.
Their numbers are similar enough. Right. Yeah. But it's also the Hurricanes are taking a bet on him getting out of New York will help him become a better player, because I think he did need to get out of New York.
For yes, the best thing for him as a player. Yeah. The Rangers player development sucks.
Yeah.
The thing that I think the Sabres and Byram are going to go 2 years no matter what. This goes to arbitration, or they'll just agree on a 2-year deal. I think they'll give him next season to kind of just play your game, play with Dahlin, boost your value as much as possible, and then we'll trade you the next year. I think that's probably what's going to happen. And, you know, the Sabres are going to have to do one of two things: change their ask, or, you know, just shut up and keep Byram.
Well, I think part of the problem with the ask is, you know, unlike the Rangers trade with Miller, where they largely got draft picks back,
yeah, no.
The Sabres are not looking for good draft picks back. No. They want players.
They don't and that want a makes single a trade, pick.
That makes the trade a little harder to make. Yeah, if they were just trying to get draft picks for Byram, he'd be gone already.
Oh, yeah. They probably could have got a top 15 pick at the draft.
Yeah.
If that's what they wanted, but clearly that's not.
I mean, look at what Montreal gave up for Noah Dobson.
Yeah.
I mean, Dobson is better than Byram, in my opinion, but the two first-round picks is a lot.
I think they're similar players. It's just Dobson's right-handed.
Yeah, but the two first-round picks is a lot, though.
Oh, yeah, it is. And they got a good depth forward with it.
Yeah.
Who's still young.
I mean, I still did. I like that trade for Montreal, too, because Noah Dobson fills a gap on that team.
And not even getting Heinemann, because Heinemann's a good third-line player for them. But just the picks they made with
Eklund and Ageson.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to go back to Byram here real quick, because I like the point that you brought up about them going to a 2-year deal no matter what, because that was good about bringing Bo and Byram, raise his value with Dahlin, and then ship him off for whatever you can get, which is a good plan at the end of the day. But listen, if it comes to the time where you're reevaluating the roster and you see Byram played really well with Dahlin, let's say Dahlin doesn't get hurt, no Byram gets hurt, and there's no fucking suspensions, and they're playing like 80 games together, whatever, and Byram looks better than he did last season, and the Sabres either A, competed for a playoff spot, or B, their team defense looks so much improved, you can honestly decide to keep him if you really want to, if the minds change between the Sabres and, let's say, because the Sabres are ninth in goals for per game this past season. Let's say that takes a hit a little bit with the Paterka trade, but let's say they're still inside the top 15. Let's say they're 13th in the league, and your team defense goes up from 30th or 31st in the league, the goals against per game, to like you're at like 21 or 22 or even closer to top 20. Then you're looking at Byram got better defensively. He kept his offensive pace. Kesterling helped us a lot. Do we just keep Byram and try to renegotiate a contract extension if they get to a 2-year deal come July 1st? That can be an option, I do think.
See, my only issue with all this, though, you know, is Kevin Adams has, you know, been adamant that he's looking to add a top six forward. It's not a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also made it no secret that Bo and Byram was available and they were looking to move on from him. Not because they didn't like the players, because a top six forward was much more needed than a defenseman, especially another left-handed defenseman when you already have Dahlin and Power.
Yep.
And, you know, he hasn't been able to get done. And I can't help but say, you know, Byram, yeah, he's a good player, but he doesn't help the Sabres right now. Get closer to, you know, ending their playoff drought. And I think a failure to trade him, you know, would be another reason on the long list of reasons that Kevin Adams just needs to go.
Yeah. And I don't mind that either. I'm on the train of trading Byron for a top six forward.
If you can get like an actual, like a guy we've brought up before, you know, St. Louis has been a team that has not been shy about, you know, their interest in Bo and Byron. There was a lot of rumors before the draft that, you know, potentially Jordan Kyrou was being made available before his no trade clause kicked in. That didn't end up happening. You know, a guy like Jake Neighbors could potentially be available. And if the Sabres can get a guy like that back in a Byron trade, that's a great trade.
I do that one for one. You know, I don't even care about another defenseman. You know, just as stupid as it sounds, Samuelson also plays his best with Dahlin. Just put up Ryan Johnson, put him on the fourth line or the third pair.
I would want Samuelson buried on the third pair. I don't want him playing top minutes. I can't wait till next summer when we're talking about Tage Thompson trade rumors, and then 2 years we're talking about Dahlin trade rumors, and 3 years Power rumors. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Quick time out before we get back to the episode, you beauties. As someone like myself who's into fitness and needs a little bit of an extra boost before a lift, or maybe I need just a little bit of energy before my next hockey game, and even when doing pod stuff to bring you guys the best content possible, Dubby always has me covered. Whether you needed to stay awake at work or need a little bit of a jolt to get you through the day, Dubby will always provide you that spark you need. There's no sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or artificial dyes, just flavored caffeine. 150 milligrams of caffeine in one serving, which is equivalent to 2 cups of coffee. Make sure to head over to Dubby.gg and use code CFBPOD for 10% off any order. Let's hop into teams with best futures.
Yeah.
So, on the list, I don't know if we have them in order or not, but we have...
It's in no particular order.
We have the Ottawa Senators, Utah Mammoth, the Montreal Canadiens. There were a couple teams, too, that when we were putting them down, I felt like maybe could compete, but we didn't want to talk about fucking 10 teams because seven teams that you look at them and they can compete for a while, but there's also a difference between a team like Vegas and Florida where they have some of the best futures because they're a competitor for a Stanley Cup, and then there's teams like these where they have some of the best futures in terms of they have a bunch of young talent.
Yeah, that's what we more so wanted to frame it, because obviously, like, Florida is going to be good for the next few years. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they still have their core locked up long term, and Vegas isn't going anywhere anytime soon with the addition of Mitch Marner. Like, you know, those teams are like cup contenders, but we're talking about like young up and coming teams more so that we see being good for a long time. And we already talked about them a little bit a while ago, but the Montreal Canadiens, I think, last year was kind of just a sneak preview of what they could be. The amount of talent they've acquired the last few years via draft and trades and just smart decisions has been phenomenal. And then you're using smart asset management to go and get a guy like Noah Dobson that fills a hole in your defensive core. And all of a sudden you look at that team is like, yeah, this team's going to be a playoff team probably next year. And they're just going to keep getting better.
Looking at them, because they just acquired Noah Dobson at the draft, your blue line now consists of Dobson, Caden Gooley, Lane Hudson, Jaden Struble. Those are four defensemen that are 25 or younger. Dobson, an elite offensive defenseman. And then after that, it's just guys that are 23 or younger. And then now you have a couple of vets like Mike Matheson, who has one more year left on his deal, but he was okay for them. And now he can play third line minutes, depending on their whole situation. You also have Wi-Fi 2 and Alexandre Carrier 2. So you have your seven defensemen that are going to be on the roster, and their blue line got a ton stronger with him. And not only that, not only do you add Dobson, but also having the firepower offensively on the power player, whether it's even strength. You have Cole Caulfield, who is still yet to hit. He didn't hit 40 goals this season,
right? He's the greatest guy that's never scored 40 goals.
He got close to it, never hit it. He's going to eventually hit it, mark my words.
Patrick, 37 this year, yeah.
Patrick Laine, Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, Yaroslav Did I just say Yaroslav Ask?
I meant Slavkovsky.
Yeah. Juraj Slavkovsky.
Yeah, but you guys get the point. And Ivan Deminov, like, and they also acquired Zach Bulldog. So they have a ton of young talent up front and on the blue line. And this team is going to be a competitor for the next 7 to 10 years, I think.
Yeah, I think the main area this team needed to improve was defensively. And I think they've gone and addressed that. But that's part of the thing with having a young team is, you know, the offense is usually there. The defensive stuff's harder to learn. I think Nick Suzuki's turning into one of the better two-way centers in the game. He's electric to watch him and Cole Caulfield together. Juraj Slafkovský just keeps getting better. I don't really see this team, you know, getting worse anytime soon.
They're not. They're really not.
The other glaring issue I see right now that they need to address at some point in the future for a long term is goaltending.
I think they have their long term solution in that.
And we'll see how he develops. But Montembeau's a good stopgap.
I like Montembeau as a bridge guy.
You can do a lot
worse
than him.
But you have Jacob Dobesh. Yes.
Yeah. But goalies are more hit or miss on whether they develop.
I think Fowler's going to be so good.
Yeah. I'm not arguing with you. But
yeah. But yeah, Montembeau, with only being 28, he can still be a starter for the next 3 years if they really wanted him.
Yeah, like I said, you could do worse than him, especially if they keep scoring at the rate they do. They just improved defensively a little bit. I think they can even potentially win a playoff series next year. Call me crazy.
I'm not calling you crazy. I think that's realistic for the Canadiens to go out. Depending on who they play and where they finish, of course, matters a lot. Like, if they end as a second wildcard team again, I don't know if that's going to happen. I mean,
we will see. I mean, the Atlantic Division is getting pretty tough.
It is getting pretty tough.
Because you have Florida that's not going anywhere. Toronto's still a contender, in my opinion. Tampa Bay's still really good. You got Ottawa now, who made the playoffs last year. And I think they're just going to keep getting better. Montreal. Then you got Detroit and Buffalo that kind of exist. But... And Boston's at
40 points.
Boston's an interesting team because they do not want to commit to a rebuild, but they need to start rebuilding.
You can clearly tell they don't want to.
I mean, you see the contracts they were handing out. Like, what? I don't get it.
They're desperate.
Tanner Janot 5-year contract.
Why do teams value him so much?
I don't know. He's a guy that'll just throw his body around.
Yeah, but just looking back to what Tampa gave up for him years ago, like I don't get like what do these executives see that we don't see?
Back when Tampa traded for him, you know, he was coming off, you know, well, I feel like his rookie year he had a really good year.
But you don't ever give up that much for a
low
guy.
Low key though, I think Tampa's was valid. I'm defending Tampa here because they were a Stanley Cup champion, and they're like, fuck it, like we're contending for a Stanley Cup right now. Fuck them draft picks.
I know, but it didn't work out.
You look like an idiot when it doesn't work out.
You win the cup. I was like, who cares?
Like, the value clearly wasn't there. Who gives up 5 draft picks for a fourth-line grinder? But, yeah. Tampa did. So, I want to...
That was a crazy trade.
I want to dive into Ottawa here as we're still in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah.
Another team that has a really bright future, of course. We know that after acquiring Linus Allmark last offseason, everybody was like, this team now got their goaltender.
That was a game changer.
And guess what? They made the playoffs, and they took the Leafs to 6 games. So I think this is another team kind of like Montreal where it's like, let's take the next step. Let's go out and win a playoff series next year. And that would be electric if both the Canadiens and the Senators won a playoff series next season. But sticking with the Senators, their blue line I think is very underrated. I think they get overhated just a little bit. And of course, it does help. You bring this up all the time, Preston, where the second that a team gets at least a goaltender they can trust, the defense in front of him tends to play better. And we saw it with the Senators last year with Allmark.
Yeah, for sure. And I really like the addition, too, of bringing in Jordan Spence. I can't believe how little it costs for them to get him.
Does help that he asked for a trade.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah,
you don't give up a lot to get a good player like that who's going to play on that blue line right away. But they're, again, a really young team. You know, Tim Stützle is only 23 years old. They bring in Dylan Cousins. He looked like a great fit on that team right away. Mm-hmm. Kind of brought some juice to that lineup. I know Chris is probably seething right now.
He probably wants to scream right now.
I mean, I think Jake Sanderson's a stud. I think he's just going to keep getting better and better and better. And now, like I said, they have a goalie that they trust, and you know he was awesome for the Senators last year, and they, you know, they I think they were a little shot. They I think they were a little I'm trying to think of the right words. They didn't look ready for the playoffs last year when it started. You could tell it was a lot of those guys' first times in the playoffs.
They it was like it wasn't jitters. It was like, oh my god, I'm trying to find.
I just don't think they were ready for the moment.
They were playing too anxious.
Yeah.
I thought they got antsy and they were like, let's just fucking. Well, I mean, that is jitters,
yeah.
Yeah, that, fair enough.
I mean, and they, obviously, they went down 3-0 and they did battle hard in game three. They lost that game in overtime, mm-hmm. right? And then they ended up forcing a game six. You know, they win that game three. Who knows what ends up happening in that series?
That's true.
It's hard to come back from 3-0 down.
It looks like Ottawa, to start the series, they're like, it's playoff hockey. We're going to throw our body around. And clearly Toronto was ready yeah. for it. And then they calmed down a little bit and fought their way back just a little bit. And now I think Ottawa right now, I know they competed for the third spot in the Atlantic last season for a little bit of it, eventually got the first wild card spot. I think that they are a threat for that third spot.
I don't know if they're good enough to push Tampa out right now.
I think they are.
I mean,
think
Tampa's
Ottawa
still
is.
A wagon, though. They're still great. They just had a horrible series against – they couldn't
of,
score.
Of course, especially Florida. Because they got hot down the stretch of the season, and it looked like they could make it to the finals or at least make a run for it, and then Florida –
I mean, I believed.
Them.
I had them in the East in my playoff record yeah. on the NHL website, so –
until that core four in Tampa is gone, they're still top three.
Yeah, I mean, Vasilevsky had an amazing season last year. Kucherov, arguably, I think he should have won MVP last year.
Hedman, Point.
Yeah, Jake Guentzel was awesome for them.
You guys are forgetting the best player out of all of them, Hagel.
Yeah, Hagel. Brandon Hagel is awesome yeah. too.
He's not the best player, guys. I was joking.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but
I mean, that Atlantic division is tough because I think Florida is by far the best team in that division.
Mm-hmm.
The
Central, you have like three teams.
Nope, I think there's six teams in the Central that can make the playoffs.
Well, Chicago is winning the division, so.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
I think the Atlantic up top is the most competitive within the top three, but I think the Central division has the most teams that could realistically make the playoffs, if that makes any sense.
I mean, you got five in the Atlantic, at least that can.
What five teams are those?
Toronto, Tampa Bay, Florida, Ottawa, Montreal.
Oh, yeah, you're right. We just talked about all of them.
Literally.
I mean, last year, yeah, five teams from the Central, five teams from the Atlantic ended up making the playoffs. I think that's a good way to pivot into our third team, the Utah Mammoth, who I think have had a pretty excellent offseason. They seem to be loading up to make a push for the playoffs next year.
They're one of those six teams that can make the playoffs.
I agree with you, yeah.
I really do think that the one glaring need on Utah, and I feel like this is the same situation that it was with the Senators, is goaltending.
Yes, I agree.
We saw when the Senators were up and coming, like Utah is, they had so much talent, but they just couldn't get the goaltending. Corpusalo was not good for them.
They finally got
a goaltending, and they made the playoffs. Now, look at Utah. They're in that same exact situation. Get goaltending. Maybe this is the year where they're at 90 points, and they barely miss out, and they look at goaltending as a glaring need, and Smith and Armstrong go out and get a goaltender, and then they make the playoffs the following year.
It's just so hard to acquire a goalie, though. Like that – yeah.
I like Vimelka. I think he is good. I think – they definitely took a hit when Connor Ingram had to step away from the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with him back in the lineup, I think they can be a playoff team with this current.
Last offseason, I legitimately thought Connor Ingram was the fucking truth. I thought he was going to...
Oh, yeah, you were riding him
hard. When we were talking about, like, the top 10 goaltenders in the league, I didn't have him in the top 10, but I was like, this dude could be an honorable mention right now because I think he's going to be good.
I think I understandably called you insane.
Yeah, he called me a fucking idiot. And I was like, dude, are you a fucking idiot?
Rightfully so.
What do you mean rightfully so?
He's an average goalie.
I think Connor Ingram, dude, you literally said it. He's a vital part of the fucking Utah Mammoth, baby.
He's a good backup.
No, he's a good starter. That's what he is.
Vimelka is the starter.
No, you guys.
100%.
I think they're wasting Connor Ingram's talent.
He's a very good 1B goalie.
He's a good backup. Yeah. He's like in the upper echelon of backups. I'll give you that. But I wouldn't feel if he was my team's long term starter, I would not feel comfortable.
Well, he only has one more year left on his deal.
Yeah,
so.
And he probably won't be on the team after that.
I think a team that does need goaltending, I mean, you can always go out and sign Ingram next offseason.
He'll get a contract. He's a good backup, like I said. Or like a team that doesn't really have a solidified starting goalie, like if Edmonton doesn't mm-hmm. address their goalie issues by then, I can see them being a team interested in bringing him in.
I can't wait to trade Alex Lyon.
Yeah.
In terms of just Utah as a whole away from goaltending, their blue line, they went out and got Sergachev last offseason. He was good for them. I know
I mean, they've been very aggressive since they moved to Utah. I will give them that. Very
Ryan
aggressive.
Smith wants to create a winner right away. He's expressed that. And they have four players under the age of 26 now that scored 60-plus points last season. Nuts. After the Paterka stuff, of course. I just think that overall, they have a good mix of young guys and older vets on both sides of the ice. And overall, this team could push for that wild card 2 spot this season if everything goes right.
It's a crowded Western Conference.
It is.
I mean, you got the Jets, the Stars, and the Avalanche. Those are all playoff teams, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what Minnesota does. They really didn't do anything this offseason.
No.
St. Louis is another team. I think they kind of outperformed expectations last year. They're kind of in the midst of a retool. They're going to be fighting for a playoff spot next year as well. And yeah, you got Utah as well. And then in the West, you don't forget that Calgary barely missed the playoffs last year as well. And now they have a long-term goalie in Dustin Wolf, and I don't see them necessarily going away.
I remember last season when Preston, when I was completely low on the Flames.
Oh, you were the biggest hater of the Flames in the world. Yeah.
Of the 70. All right, hear me out.
Didn't you say they were going to win like 25 games or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Pacific Division's weak. They could go and compete for that third spot in the Pacific Division.
I don't think so.
You think LA's still in there?
Yes, I think so. LA's
100%.
Yeah.
I was big on LA.
I don't think Jordan Spence leaving is going to hurt them as much as people.
I also don't think that Cody Ceci and fucking who is their other defenseman they got? Dumoulin. Yes, Dumoulin. If that's Ken Holland's answers to the defensive shit. Now, granted, I'm just saying credit.
In terms of the division, I still think they're better than the Flames. That's what we're talking about here. If you look at the top, because it is probably the weakest division in the league
by far. Yeah.
I just want to say, Zach's prediction of 25 wins overall for the Flames. Dustin Wolf got 29 alone.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, Vegas is clear-cut. They're winning the division next year. I'd be shocked if they didn't.
They have a full top line of 100 points.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Insane. I have a feeling like NHL 26, you're just going to be banned from using them online.
I will say, though, going back to the Wild Card 2 stuff real quick before we move on, it's going to be crowded. I think we saw a little bit this year where we had St. Louis, Minnesota, and Calgary really be the three teams. I think there is a shot where we see Minnesota, St. Louis, Calgary, and Utah all be competing and be with like 3 to 5 points within each other towards the trade deadline and down the final stretch of the season. And I think that is a product of Utah going out and getting Paterka. And of course, we talked about this earlier where Paterka doesn't play any defense, but that's not the concern that Utah had with acquiring Paterka. It's getting that goal scorer that can put up 30 goals and that can put up 70 to 80 points a season and can really play on that top line with guys like Clayton Keller and play with Logan Cooley. So I think Utah has a good roster, and I think they're good enough to compete. And we'll see if Ryan Smith, let's say something happens down this in the season where they feel like they're competitive enough. Maybe Ryan Smith is aggressive at the deadline, or maybe he sits. I don't know. But again, I like what they're doing in Utah.
I know this is kind of crazy to do this now. We were talking about this. So I was like, why don't we do our way too early playoff predictions? Like,
all
right,
let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's start with the Eastern Conference. So yeah. Let's go one at a time.
Shut the fuck up.
I mean, you're going to be crazy. Now's the time. But, like, looking at the Atlantic Division, I think Florida wins that division.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, last year in the playoffs, when we were doing our playoff predictions, until someone beats the Kings, they're the Kings, not the actual Kings. You know what I'm saying? and then, you know, I think Toronto and Tampa Bay are still the second and third best teams in those divisions. I don't really see the top three changing. I think just the seeding will change. I think Florida will be that one seed.
Mm-hmm.
I can see Tampa second over Toronto.
Yeah, I think those teams will be neck and neck, and they're probably going to play each other in the first round of the playoffs again, because that's what we want to see, right? The same teams just playing each other over and over and over again. And then in the Metro, I think Carolina wins that division. Yeah, I think Washington, kind of the season they had last year was a little bit of a fluke.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that team was really riding the wave of Ovi's goal chase, and I think that was elevating all their play. And Logan Thompson was also playing out of his mind.
You're telling me in the summer, you're saying, we're going to trade for a Vezina-caliber goalie and Logan Thompson.
No, no, I'm not.
I know, but I'm saying, like, nobody was saying nobody. That.
Yeah, I thought it was a good move when they did it. Oh, yeah. But I wasn't expecting him to have the season. Nobody was. He was excellent. And that's kind of what led to them overperforming this year. I still think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're winning. They're not winning the conference again. Yes.
Yes, they were.
The Capitals won the Eastern Conference.
I don't think they're anywhere close to that. But they're still very much
left. Yeah, I think Carolina wins the Metro. I have the Devils coming in second. And then for the third, this is where it gets tougher. I want to say Washington, but I'm going to make a crazy offseason here and say the Blue Jackets are the 3 seed in the Metro.
Okay. So you're really riding on Elvis here.
Yeah, I think either they live and die by him. If he's okay, if he's good enough, their scoring's good enough. If they just get average goaltending, I think they'll playoff team.
He's such a weird goalie to me because there's so many times where nothing's getting by him.
Yeah, like I said, they live and die by him. And then for the wild card teams, I have this is where it gets tough because there's so many great teams. I don't see it's really tough to I'm just gonna say just because I know I said earlier Washington's probably a playoff team, but I'm gonna just say Ottawa, Montreal, the wild card teams again. It's hard for me to give them a reason to push them out.
I'm looking at this. Are you going Western Conference or am I going
you can
East?
Go. Okay. Yeah, you can go.
So my top three in my Atlantic Division, I have first Florida, no brainer. Second Toronto, again, no brainer for me. I think third, I'm going Ottawa here. I just think I Ottawa pushes. You said okay. I thought you were gonna say it was a bad.
No, Columbus is a Metro.
Okay, I know. The Metropolitan Division, I agree. Hurricanes first. I think they're the clear-cut better team in that division by far. Washington is not getting to where they were last season. Number two, I have New Jersey. Again, it's just because the division is so weak. I don't necessarily think New Jersey jumps off the page.
I think New Jersey would have been different last year if they were healthy in the playoffs, though. They were decimated by injuries.
They were being killed. Third, again, this is where it gets tough. I agree. I'm not going to go Columbus. I'm going to go ahead and go Washington. And it's the same situation where I think a lot of it's just going to ride on Logan Thompson the same way it rides on Merz Lincoln's, where if they get Logan Thompson and they get Connor McMichael and Protoss playing at the level they did last season, they can make the playoffs. But also, are you really going to rely on an Alexander Ovechkin scoring at 7.7 goals a game? Like that's unsustainable as it is now.
This might be Ovi's farewell tour this season.
It will be. In the wild card, Montreal and... Ooh, the second one's going to be tough. I'm going between the Blue Jackets and the Rangers. I'm going to go with my gut. I'm going Blue Jackets.
You don't think Tampa Bay's going to make the playoffs?
Oh, I forgot about them. Sorry. Tampa's first. Tampa's first wild card.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, they're not making the playoffs.
Yes, I forgot. I appreciate you saying that because I forgot about them.
Yeah.
I have Tampa Bay 1 and I have Montreal 2. And I think there's going to be a decent gap.
So you have the same playoff teams from last year then?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see a team like Columbus, New York, or Detroit sneaking.
I don't think New York's a playoff team. I don't.
I think they'll be close.
I think they'll be close, and then they'll make a stupid move at the deadline, thinking they're closer than they are, and then they won't make the playoffs again. I don't think they're, unless Igor has like an insane year, I don't think they're a playoff team.
All right, boys. Get ready for my team.
I don't even want to know.
Buffalo Sabres win the Atlantic Division.
No.
He's going to have them as a wild card team, I bet you.
Yeah, he will. Oh my god, dude.
Alright, we got Florida 1, Tampa 2, Toronto 3. That's my divisional playoff team.
Yeah.
And you got obviously Carolina. They're
winning.
They might win the East this year.
I don't know. You mean like in the standings? Yes. Okay. It's like I don't think they could beat the Panthers in the playoffs. Yeah.
This is just pure standing wise.
Okay.
We got Washington 2. I think they're going to, you know, fall off a little bit, but they're still going to be.
It's not ridiculous to say that.
Then I want to say the Devils, but I just don't trust the Devils.
What? Come on.
They made the playoffs last year with half their team injured.
Who do you have making the playoffs here at 3?
The Devils.
Okay, I thought you were implying that they weren't getting this up.
I was like flipping back and forth
between them and who? Columbus?
Maybe. Let me get there. Wild card 1, Columbus. I think you know, like you said, they live and die by Elvis.
Yes.
And I think this will be the year that he finally puts that team on his back and gets and obviously wild card too, you already know.
Say it.
The Buffalo Sabres.
So you don't have Ottawa or Montreal making it.
That's funny.
Oh my god, I'm fucking crying.
They improved what they needed to. Yeah, they lost.
You think they're better than those teams?
You think? I'm sorry. I love the Sabres. Okay. You think they're better?
I fucking hate them. They make me.
I have to.
They made the playoffs though.
Okay. They didn't get any points from the Sabres.
It doesn't matter.
The Sabres couldn't beat the fucking Canadiens.
That's fine. You will this year.
The Sabres couldn't hold a lead to save their life.
That's different. We actually
do it.
I'm going to come back.
I don't know what this dude smokes to like get so optimistic about the Sabres every year. I honestly admire it because I can't do it anymore.
After two off seasons ago where I picked the Sabres to finish top three in the Atlantic Division, they are not making the playoffs in my fucking predictions until they prove me otherwise.
I completely agree with that. I'm not picking the Sabres to do shit until they actually prove that they can play.
Listen, if the Sabres
I'm a real fan too. I just can't take it anymore, man.
If the Sabres do come back and make the playoffs, I'll come back to this episode and we will give you all the props.
I'm not giving him props. He's just fucking. He was going to say no matter what.
All right, let's get to the Western Conference.
Okay,
now.
So I'll start. I won't go into as big details with this as I did last time. Central, I think Dallas, I think is the best team in that division.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Jets will take a bit of a step back. I think losing Ehlers hurts a lot. I don't know if you're going to get another MVP season out of Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, he's won back-to-back Vezinas. Who knows?
Make it three straight.
They got an MVP season from Hellebuyck this year. But
He won it, though.
I don't think he deserved
it. I do think it was voter fatigue, but I do think Hellebuyck deserved it.
And I think the two seed in the Central will be Colorado, and then three will be Winnipeg. And then Pacific, Vegas wins that division. LA set two, and then Edmonton three. I like those change.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah, and then wild card, that's where it gets really interesting. I think St. Louis is a playoff team, and I'm going to pick Utah as the second wild card team.
That's interesting.
Just copied my list through my brain.
So
I don't think Minnesota makes the playoffs this year.
You guys are going to be shocked here. Number one, the Minnesota Wild. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Number one, the Dallas Stars we have going. Number two, the Colorado Avalanche. They have Nathan MacKinnon. They have Makar. They have Blackwood for a full season. Dangerous. Number three, the Minnesota Wild.
Whoa, okay.
We're going Minnesota. Kaprizov, now this is all on Kaprizov. If he's for another 30 games this season, they're not getting the third seed. They struggled without him last season.
Oh, yeah.
But
if he's
healthy for 75 to 80 games, Kaprizov could get 100 points. He could get 40 goals. He was on a ridiculous pace when he was healthy last season. I think is very possible. Hopes are not high for it, though.
Don't worry. They'll trade for Nyquist at the deadline again.
Yeah, and then it'll be offside.
Is he signed? Yeah.
First, I do have the Winnipeg Jets here. I did not forget about them this year. Hellebuyck, Scheifele, Connor, they're gross. And then second, I like Utah here. I like Utah.
Did you skip the Pacific Division?
Oh, I did skip the Pacific Division. Sorry. I'll get to the Pacific Division.
I mean, I'll never guess
what
the three teams are going to be.
The same exact three. Yeah. In the same exact order.
So
Vegas,
LA. Are we all going to have the same predictions pretty much? The same teams? Okay.
Pretty much.
We don't have... Wait, do we have Minnesota?
No. I don't have Minnesota. Yeah, he's the only one that... Yeah.
He's the one being different.
So you don't think the Blues make the playoffs then?
I think they just missed out with Calgary. Chris? Pokdoku? Ready for it?
Let me pull it up on my phone.
Sweet. So we decided to do a little bit something fun because it's the off season. There's absolutely nothing to do whatsoever. So we were coming up with stuff last night. We figured, you know what? Let's do some Pokdoku for you guys. Be a little bit creative. And overall, let's have some fun with this, okay?
All right. First up, we got a player that has played for both Anaheim and the Calgary Flames.
Anaheim and the Flames.
Are we going for it as rare as possible here?
We could.
Because I already have a player in mind.
I had a player earlier.
It's Sam Carrick.
No, he's Edmonton Ducks.
Edmonton Ducks?
Yeah. He has
fucking throw him in there, then. Right. Throw him in the other one. Who played for Calgary and Anaheim?
I mean, probably a lot of players.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That is 1% on Sam Carrick.
Give me that.
That was a good one, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I know a pretty obvious one for Vancouver, Anaheim.
Yeah, I think we're all thinking the same thing.
Ryan Kesler.
It's the same one for Vancouver Blues.
Yeah.
I think it'd be more rare for Blues.
It would be.
Ryan Miller.
Yeah.
Throw Ryan Miller in there.
Blues Canucks. I mean, it fits in both.
So I don't think were we thinking of Ryan Kesler in there for Ducks Canucks? Okay. Yeah. I thought, okay, I wasn't sure if you were thinking Miller.
Kessler's probably like 30%.
Honestly, probably like the most guessed answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Ryan Miller. That is 11%.
Yeah.
Not bad. Right. Not bad.
A Canuck and a Duck. Ryan Kesler.
Yeah, just go with the easy one.
Yeah.
All right.
It's probably going to be like 50%.
23.
That's lower than what I thought.
Yeah, I honestly thought it was at least 30.
Okay.
I'll be honest. Me and Zach did look at this before. Nail Yakupov for Blues Oilers.
Oh, I got a good one for that one. James Neal.
Which one will be lower? We think Yakupov will be lower?
I don't know. Rock, paper, scissors.
Okay.
Okay, put James Neal in.
I forgot he was a Blue.
He played for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, that PTO.
Yeah.
Point nine.
Let's go.
A Flame and a Blue. We could have put James Neal there too.
J-Bo, mister.
J-Bo, mister. 9%.
Okay, under 10. We like that. Dude, that Calgary Anaheim one's going to get us. I mean, I guess we can leave that to the end.
I thought I had one earlier. Wait. Jonas Hiller.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Ooh, I like that.
Forgot about Hiller.
I hope most people did too. 24%.
Oh my God. He thought he had something. Yeah. He thought he had...
I don't think there's a ton of players that will play for the Ducks and the Flames.
And then this one is someone who's played for the Flames and has also played for 2+ teams in the same season.
I mean, we could just be easy and think of players that got traded from the Flames last year. Yeah, I would put Adam Henrique. I know they traded for him like a couple years ago.
4%.
All right. What was our
uniqueness scale of 72?
The lower the better. That's a, very, that's a pretty good
that's
score.
Great. That's really good. Better than 200.
What was the number one answer for Anaheim and Vancouver?
Anaheim and Vancouver, that is Ryan Kesler.
It was Ryan Kesler?
Yeah.
What was number two?
It doesn't say.
Oh, I thought it did.
No.
Okay.
That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, head over down in the description. Go check out all of our social media as well as subscribe and hit the notification bell for new episodes every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And we'll see you guys in our next episode.